All right, welcome back in to the Locked On Nets podcast. We decided to wrap that one up there and turn this into a part three. This is a bonanza. This is unprecedented on the Locked On Nets podcast. There's never been a part three of anything. As Drexler pointed out to me during the break, I went a little bit over the top there. We were probably only going to break down like two or three guys. We broke down every single player for you, I feel like, or at least every single guy that's under contract. Outside of Isaiah Whitehead, but you know what, he can improve by himself. I think we're gonna continue now in this new edition of the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, realistic free agent targets. All right, so the Nets already have. Let's bring it up right here. The cap is at $101 million. The Nets have $84 million committed in contracts next year. So that leaves them a little over $16 million to work with this offseason. Figure they give maybe $5 million a year to Joe Harris. That leaves $11 million to fill out your final three roster spots unless they trade someone or they want to go into the luxury tax. Or they get someone on a really good deal. So all that being said, Drexler, how do you think the Nets approach free agency? And how do you think they even start to structure a big money offer for someone like Jabari Parker or Zach LaVine or an Aaron Gordon? How would you go about that?
Yeah, I'm not sure quite the interest they would have in a LaVine or Gordon. I definitely think it's something they would take a look at for sure. But again, it all comes down to budget and young controllable players. I think you can look at Jabari Parker would be the first one I think they do take a look at. And in order to acquire him, I'm penciling in the Nets to re-sign Joe Harris at $5-6 million, like you mentioned. So now you're already down to 10 to 11. So let's go based off of that. That's probably not enough to acquire Jabari Parker. You can send him an offer, but I think the Bucks would match an offer of that stature. So really the only attainable way would be to trade Jeremy Lin and lose that $12-13 million that he's been getting paid. And then you can offer him maybe Parker a $17-18 million a year, and that would be the way to acquire him. Other options after Parker, I think the Nets aren't going to be looking at too many guards. We talked about the logjam at point guard and shooting guard, so maybe Kevon Looney, Patrick McCaw from the Warriors would be intriguing options that can really add depth to your power forward spot, maybe even play a little bit of center here and there. Obviously, that'd be more on Kevon Looney, but that's a stretch. So I think those would be some guys you could look at. I don't know the type of interest that they'd have in Julius Randle, but those are all guys that I think the Nets could take a look at. I haven't heard anything, but I just think that is options that I'm throwing out there that the Nets could take a look at.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you on all those guys. And Jabari Parker, it's interesting because it's almost like you wouldn't want to trade Jeremy Lin unless you knew he had definite interest in coming to Brooklyn. But I think it's a really logical landing spot for him. Obviously, the biggest market in the country and a team kind of desperately needing a face. Parker desperately needing to restart his career. And if you're the Nets, obviously, it all depends on how bullish you are on his two knees. So for me, there's almost too many variables to see that as realistic. But as a hypothetical, I'm really, really intrigued by it. And I think Parker surrounded by shooting and passing could make for a really interesting offensive team. And suddenly, if you're the Nets, you have a core, which you never would have thought you'd be able to say the very first year after the Celtics curse ended. In terms of lower money guys, I wrote down a million different names here. I thought Rodney Hood, who I've kind of fallen out of love with based on his inability to find much consistent success in Cleveland. But just as a bigger guy who has a really diverse offensive game and would add more shooting, if you could get him for $9 million a year, so like a three-year, $27 million contract, like that's kind of intriguing to me. If you could get him for less than that, that'd be really interesting. As far as vets they could potentially look at, Trevor Ariza, as an offense-defense guy, and I have a feeling he's going to end up retiring in Houston, so maybe that's not the best one. The one I really latched onto in terms of vets was J.J. Redick, who's a free agent this offseason and happens to live in Brooklyn already, I believe, or at the very least his family is living in Brooklyn already, and it was a spot where he considered coming last season, and I guess it'll be kind of tough for him to decide to leave Philly after the amazing run they've had to end this year. That's obviously not over, and if they make the finals, maybe they're just going to say screw it and break the bank to bring everyone back. But Philly has some difficult decisions coming up, because eventually you're going to have to pay Saric, you're going to have to pay Simmons, and about two off seasons, you're giving him whatever the max is at that point for a player his age. So I have a feeling like they're not going to really be willing to commit long-term money to Redick. And it seems like, based on what Redick has said on his podcasts on a couple of different occasions, that he kind of wants his next contract to, if not be his last one, to take him into his late 30s and have some security. And it kind of makes a lot of sense for him to go to Brooklyn. The only issue is with Alan Crabb already here and kind of the just the depth at the guard spot, I don't know if he necessarily makes sense. The two guys I had as the most intriguing were Danny Green, who I think is a vet who will provide kind of the championship mentality they want, but also hasn't been that good in a few years, so will be okay with a reduced role, and is a much stronger defender than anything the Nets have at the guard position. And the guy I like the most out of this group, Will Barton of the Denver Nuggets, who I don't necessarily know the Nets will be interested in, just because, again, they're such a gluttony at that guard spot. But in terms of someone who's an athletic wing, if it means you have to trade a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson somewhere else, I really like his game. I really like his scoring ability. And most important, I think he brings an energy and athleticism the Nets lack. So I just threw a lot at you, Drexler. Feel free to focus on what you want out of all that dribble.
I think this is something that me and you, like, see, the Nets, you threw out a lot of guards. And the thing with the Nets is they're a roster full of guards and with young players. So I'm not sure how much interest they'd have in guys like that. They want to get, because if you do sign, say, Rodney Hood, for example, he's going to be a guy that's going to play. So then who's he taking minutes from? We've talked about Russell, Lynn, Dinwiddie, Crabb, LeVert. Somebody's not going to be playing, and the Nets want to play these young guys, develop them. So I'm not sure the type of interest they'd have in guys like Redick or Hood. The one that you did throw out there that I did think could maybe the Nets have interest in would be Will Barton, because he could play the three, and so he wouldn't be taking minutes away from those young guys. But I'd stay young and stay with this core and see how they develop and get them as many minutes as possible.
Yeah, no, and you make a good point. Like, maybe a lot of those names weren't realistic, but it kind of goes back to my core question when you're constructing a roster for this Nets team, and that's, I mean, how much do you want to bet on these guys? Like, obviously, Joe Harris, you resigned for $5 million. That's a great contract. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, currently under a great contract. He's making $2.5 million next year. Alan Crabb, you're paying him a ton of money, but clearly they're really invested in him, and they want it. Given, I mean, they don't have a choice. Even if they don't want to give him that type of money, they're paying him that type of money. But it's interesting because, like, you look up and down and you're like, okay, what's the ceiling of this team? Like, even if all these guys hit their potential simultaneously in 2-3 years, is that a 5 seed in the East to maybe at their ultimate peak makes the second round? Like, how do you elevate this group? And maybe that means packaging assets together this year, like I suggested earlier, and finding a way to break into the top 10 of the draft. Or maybe it means waiting a few years and then trading these guys. But you figure with the Nets being under control of their first round picks now, this is kind of the pivotal offseason where you want to start making some decisions on what you want the long-term direction of your franchise to be.
Well, you're talking about like what's the potential of this group and do you want to, how much you invest in them and things like that. For the Nets, you kind of have no choice. You haven't had your draft pick for your first round draft pick for how many years now?
Three.
So
yeah.
I mean, you can't really go any other direction but then to try and develop these guys, because that's the only thing you can do. So I think that's the way the Nets are looking at this, and they're going to just continue to keep along this long road of developing young talent and see where it leads them, because they don't really have any other avenue.
All right, so that leads into our next question, whether or not the Nets are going to be tanking next year. But before we get into a deeper breakdown of that, I wanted to remind everyone that we have a very exciting guest on the Locked On Nets podcast next week. The New York Post's Brian Lewis making his Locked On Nets debut either next week or perhaps the week after if we can't quite figure out a time. But we're going to be talking about his Twitter war with Stephen Bondi that we broke down on the pod. And then Brian Lewis liked our tweet, and Stephen Bondi got – Stephon Bondi, I'm not quite sure. He got upset about it. So I'm going to invite him on the podcast too, but I think he might hate us. So that might not be a possibility. Anywho, Brian Lewis on the Locked On Nets podcast next week. So please stay tuned for that. Actually, by the time you're listening to it, it's going to be this week. So that's awesome. Listen up. Anyways, we are back on the Locked On Nets podcast. This is a winding journey that has delved into three parts due to my disorganization and mine and the NBA's Matthew Drexler, who is our guest, our ability and love of talking basketball. So I'll give us a little credit too. All right, so you've kind of given me your answer on this already within your last question, but it seems like you don't see the Nets making any conscious effort to tank next year. I think the term that Adipidis used and is one that I would agree with was soft tank. And to me, what that means is just kind of playing it out, like not really signing any big game-changing free agents, bringing Joe Harris back in, maybe bringing Nick Stauskas back in, add your first-round pick, maybe sign in one stretch four type to fill out the back of the roster, but largely bringing back the same team next year as you have this season and leaving your salary cap as flexible as possible for the future and the 2019 offseason where the Nets should have some significant money the way things are currently lining up. And I just generally, based on your last answer, I think you agree with that plan. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, actually, that's interesting. I've never heard of the term soft tank. But
I thought it was great. Yeah, I hadn't either.
If that's what we're calling it, sure, that's exactly what the Nets are doing because they don't have their draft pick this draft. They'll have it next year, but they're going to want to win, I think. And that doesn't mean they're going to go out there and sign every free agent that they can that would want. It just means that with the guys that they have now, the young players, these young players on the roster are going to try to win now. How many games they win is another question, which is why I guess you use the term soft tank, because it still could be a lottery team that picks 9th, 10th in the draft next year. So I think that's definitely the plan for the Nets next season. Maybe a Jabari Parker, Derek Favors, anybody that's a big name, and then they'll just try and roll with this roster, but not lose. They'll try and see how many games they can win.
Yeah, and again, like to me, like you upgrade that stretch four spot, and you get an Anthony Tolliver in there, or a free agent I didn't get to, and an Ersan Ilyasova type in that spot. Oh, like I think that makes the Nets offense just on its face a lot more consistent next offseason, and that would already get me pretty excited. And then you add a really good defensive piece in this draft, like someone like a DeAnthony Melton or Raleigh Alkins, who can kind of be a lockdown in one of those guard spots if you're going to mix them in at the two or maybe even the three if you're going small. You get a year of improvement out of Jared Allen, maybe someone like Spencer Dinwiddie, D'Angelo Russell, Alan Crabb takes the next step forward in their games, and you get Jeremy Lin back to the rotation. All of a sudden, you don't necessarily have a playoff team in the East, but I think you have a team that's in the race for the eighth spot, and that brings up an intriguing question of whether or not that's worth it for Brooklyn. And I think it is, after 4 or 5 years of misery, to have a team that's truly competitive on a night-to-night basis. And obviously, Nets fans got a taste of that this year because the Nets played more close games than I think any other team in the NBA, but you want a team that's even a step up from that, that really brings it consistently. I think that'd be a lot of fun. And generally, you don't want to be mediocre in the NBA. That's what a lot of people call NBA purgatory, where you're not getting a top 10 pick and you're not fighting for a championship. But given the Nets' struggles the last few seasons, I think I think that would be worth it in and of itself. And Drexler, you're speaking from a place of fandom. Would that be fun for you? Like just to be in the chase for a playoff spot?
Yeah, definitely. Because it's something that we haven't had in how many years. So it would definitely just be cool to see. Oh, can we be in the playoffs? Can we experience it? But yeah, you're right. You're either you say NBA purgatory. That's I've heard that before too. But just even simpler, you're either in, teams know, you're either in or you're out. And what that means is you either have a chance to win a championship or you don't. And right now, there's really maybe 3, 4, 5 at most that think they can win a championship. And when in reality, there's probably only one when they're all healthy. And we all know that's the Golden State Warriors, if Durant and Curry.
Charlotte Hornets. Oh, healthy. Yeah, Warriors. Yeah, no, I was with you the whole time. Keep going.
So, either way, the Celtics know they can have a chance to win a championship in the next few years. The Cavs, as long as they have LeBron, but he may leave there too. The Raptors think that they're in. I don't buy it. And then the Rockets. Other than that, I don't think really any other team in the league truly believes, maybe not the players, but the front office believes that they have a chance to win a championship. So it's kind of where you say, do you want to make the 8th seed and then that's it? Do you want to make the 5th seed and then that's it? So I'm more on the side with you. You're either in or you're out. And if you're not in, you're not one of those top 4 or 5 teams, you should be out and really trying to get those young assets.
Yeah, and again, this is what we keep saying with the Nets. There is a flip side to this run it back scenario. Like you trade Jeremy Lin, and then you put a lot of money into another really young piece, like someone like Jabari Parker. Then all of a sudden you have maybe a slightly different path next season. Like maybe I'm overrating Lin and how much he'd affect the Nets win total. But there are ways, or you combine current assets to trade into the top 10, and you lose a Spencer Dinwiddie and Hollis Jefferson, and add someone like Jesus, I already forgot how to pronounce his name. Mikal Bridges. There we go. I'm right there. Mikal Bridges. You add a Mikal Bridges type, like all of a sudden, like maybe you do get into a scenario where you're picking in the top 8 next year. And you know, one guy suffers an injury, and all of a sudden you're picking in the top 5. So you never really know how this is going to go. But I think the Nets have 2 divergent paths this offseason. And I think the one that we're both referencing, just kind of adding a free agent, adding your first round pick, getting everyone healthy, I think that's the most likely path for the Brooklyn Nets. All right, 2 more questions to go on this Locked On Nets podcast. But first, I want to remind everyone to rate and review the Locked On Nets podcast. Paying people like Matthew Drexler to appear on our pod is not easy. It's not affordable. We need to be making a lot of money to do that. And to be making money, we have to have a lot of people listening. To have a lot of people listening, we need to get good reviews. So go on iTunes, give us 4 stars, give us 5 stars, and encourage your friends to listen, because it really does help us do more podcasts. No, we are not actually paying Matthew Drexler, but he's gone over an hour. I'm going to buy him a beer or something. So yeah, sorry. What were you going to say?
I was saying it was a hard get.
Oh yeah. No, you were tough. I really had to bribe you, and you didn't just immediately be like, "Cool, I'd love to do it." Anyways,
right.
Final 2 questions. We went over the soft tank. This next one is obviously dependent on what the Nets do in free agency, but I'm just gonna say, based on the current roster, Matthew Drexler, what do you think the starting lineup for the Brooklyn Nets is gonna look like for Game 1 of 2018-2019?
I think that all depends on if Jeremy Lin's there, and I think the Nets think really highly of him, and they won't move him unless they get a trade that they really love. So I'm going to go ahead and say Jeremy Lin's on the roster coming into next year. So with that being said, I think it's kind of similar to what we would see going into last year, with the exception of Jared Allen. I think it's going to be Lin, Russell. You can see Allen Crabbe starting at the 3 just to spread the floor a little bit more. I think Damari Carroll, they like him at the 4. They like his veteran presence. He's going to start if he's on this team. And Jared Allen will be the 5. So I think it'll be Lin, Russell, Crabbe, Carroll, and Allen going into next year.
You know, I wish I could disagree with you, but that is literally the exact 5 I had written down. I think what Lin brings defensively makes him a better fit next to Russell than Spencer Dinwiddie is. And I'd be intrigued by Lin and Dinwiddie together, because then you just have a lot of passing and a lot of smarts on the floor, and just a lot. Not that D'Lo doesn't bring those same qualities, but they're just more unselfish players.
And that brings me back to the point of mixing and matching.
Right.
You want to play Lin and Dinwiddie. Dinwiddie's got to learn how to play a little bit off the ball more, because I think the Nets are going to be doing a lot of that with so many young guards. So I'd love to see Dinwiddie expand his game a little bit more. But go ahead.
Right. No. And then you can also have like Lin and LeVert, and that to me is like, you want to have a really good defensive lineup. Like I don't see a scenario where D'Lo's not starting next year unless something traumatic happens, just because they are so invested in him. But a lineup of Lin, LeVert, Crabbe, Carroll, Allen, that's not a great defensive team, just because you have a lot of youth, and then Lin and Carroll are both, Carroll in past seasons are coming off major injuries and probably aren't quite as athletic as they were at their peaks. But you have five guys who I think are at least solid defensively, and I think that would be the best avenue for the Nets to be a good, or maybe not good, but a slightly above average defensive team. So I think that'd be interesting. As far as the bench, I had the pecking order as Karras, then Dinwiddie, then Hollis Jefferson, then Joe Harris, though I think Karras is still going to play relatively big minutes just because of the way Kenny Atkinson likes to shove up his rotation. And then whoever you sign to be either the backup center or the new stretch four in that 10th spot. So that's kind of what I had going into next season. And you look at a team that's legitimately 10 deep, depending on who that 10th guy is.
Yeah, and I did a little bit differently, but I like the way you did it in ranking of who comes off the bench first. But in terms of second unit, if you were to see all five starters off the floor, who would be the next five off the bench? I think it would be a combination. It would be Dinwiddie, LeVert, Harris, Hollis Jefferson, and I went with Quincy Aces. I don't know who else is going to play, so yeah. I just went with I think the Nets could, if they don't have add anybody else new in the offseason, that you could see them resign Quincy Acey just to add some big man depth.
Right, and it could be Dante Cunningham in that spot, or it could be whoever they end up with in free agency. And we've mapped up this rotation. We didn't even put in a spot for their potential first round pick. And obviously, if you're picking 29th, there's a chance that guy spends a lot of time with the Long Island Nets next year, depending on who they get. But you never know. It could be someone who surprises them and is a Kyle Kuzma type and just forces his way into the lineup based on sheer force of will. Okay, final question, and this one we can have some fun with it, from Brendan Baccarella, friend of Josh Bass, and by association, friend of the podcast, friend of mine, I would say, even though I've never met him. He asks, do you have any hope left to give? Matt Drexler, you're the Nets fan. Do you have any hope?
Yeah.
kind of a dark way to end, but.
Do I have hope? That's a loaded question.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I thought I'd just spring it on you. Yeah.
Hope in terms of the near future? No, because I guess you're assuming can they be good in the near future, and it depends on how you value good, and most people value that by wins, and there's not going to be a lot of Brooklyn Nets wins within the next year or two. But in the long term, maybe 4 or 5 years from now, I think there's a lot of hope because the front office is doing the best that they can right now. I think they're taking strategic, calculated moves, with not loading too much into any one player or not trying to go out there and sign a superstar, not gambling the future, just acquiring as many young assets as possible and just trying to develop them, because that's really all you can do right now without your draft picks. So I think they're making the right moves in the short term, so it'll help them out in the long term. So patience, Nets fans.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I think, to me, what defines the Nets' long-term future is how well they're able to translate assets into better ones. And what I mean by that is, with the way the Nets lineup is currently, or their roster is currently constructed, you have 8 or 9 guys who down the road project anywhere from really solid role players to stars. And I think the three guys I'm thinking of there are D'Angelo Russell and above him, Karis LeVert and Jared Allen. But you got to find a way to turn those role guys, or if those potential stars just end up being just solid players, you got to find a way to package 2 or 3 of them into either a player or a pick that's going to turn into something more, is going to turn into an all-star, because that, as it's been proven time and time again in the NBA, is ultimately how you win. And maybe that's as simple as getting lucky one year and getting someone like Donovan Mitchell with the 16th pick, but that doesn't happen all that often. For a lot of teams, that's never happened in their histories. So the most realistic avenue for that is again, just the packaging of role players to get a star. And even that is not something that happens very common in the NBA. So to say I'm bullish on the Nets' future would be a little bit of a stretch, but Sean Marks has proven to be very competent. Kenny Atkinson has been proven to be able to turn these guys from non-assets into assets. So I think that combination, the Nets will have a lot of chess pieces to operate with. It's when they decide to push them together and who they decide to push them together on that'll ultimately decide the Nets' future. All right, we went 1 hour and 10 minutes breaking down everything Brooklyn Nets. I feel like I could not do another podcast until next offseason and have given you guys enough to go on. But we will strive on, at least for the next 5 or 6 days, though. This should have you covered. Matthew Drexler, I really do owe you a drink or something. Thank you so much for doing this with me. And a big time shout out to everyone who asked us questions. Clint E., Brendan Baccarella from Twitter, and Adipidus for fueling this massive podcast. Shout out to you guys.